Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about the Keystone XL oil pipeline, tribal language revitalization efforts, and an update on the death of a 16-year-old Crow girl, Selena Not Afraid. It's Thursday, January 23rd. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Warm weather and a lack of snow in parts of Montana has led to the cancellation of a skijoring competition in Whitefish and an ice fishing event on Canyon Ferry Reservoir near Townsend this weekend. Organizers of the Whitefish Skijoring World Championship canceled its event, scheduled to run Friday through Sunday, citing a forecast of warmer weather and rain in the Whitefish area. Meanwhile, the Broadwater Lions Club Perch Derby has been canceled for the second year straight due to unsafe ice conditions. Montana's Attorney General has signed on to a letter saying the impeachment proceedings against President Donald Trump pose a threat to all future elections and establish a dangerous historical precedent. The letter sent yesterday morning from 21 Republican state attorneys general urges the U.S. Senate to reject the two articles of impeachment approved by the House in December and dismiss the current trial. Wyoming is one of five states whose Republican AG did not sign on. Fox, who's running for the Republican nomination for Montana governor, tweeted, quote, "In short, the articles lack any reasonable evidentiary basis and are fundamentally flawed as a matter of constitutional law," end quote. The U.S. Department of Interior yesterday signed off on a section of the Keystone XL pipeline that will pass through 44 miles of federally managed land in Montana. Kayla DeRoche reports.
On Wednesday, Canada-based TC Energy won the right-of-way to build a portion of its 1,200-mile pipeline across Bureau of Land Management land in Montana. Tribes involved in an ongoing legal challenge to the Keystone XL pipeline maintain this latest development changes nothing in their lawsuit. Natalie Landreth represents the Fort Belknap Indian community in Montana and the Rosebud Sioux Tribe in South Dakota.
Any federal agency issuing any piece of a permit simply does one thing at this point in time, which is it's going to make them a new defendant in this lawsuit.
The tribes are suing TC Energy on the basis that the proposed crude oil pipeline violates land rights treaties established in the mid-19th century. In December, a U.S. judge in Montana ruled tribal and environmental lawsuits against the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline could go forward. If built, the pipeline would enter the United States through Phillips County in northeastern Montana. Phillips County Commissioner Richard Dunbar says he's thrilled the project is finally moving forward.
We do have a gas field up here, and a lot of our tax money, or property production tax money we get from the gas field, we only getting about 10% of what we got prior to 2010. So our budgets are tight. So if this, once this goes through and we increase that property tax base, it'll be huge for the county.
The pipeline would also cross through Valley, Macon, Dawson, Prairie, and Fallon counties in northeastern Montana. According to court documents, TC Energy plans to begin pre-construction work in February in Montana, South Dakota, and Nebraska. It hopes to begin building a mile-long segment across the U.S.-Canada border in April. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
The Supreme Court's conservative majority appears ready to reinvigorate a Montana scholarship program and make it easier to use public money to pay for religious schooling. The court divided along ideological lines in arguments yesterday over a provision in Montana's constitution that bars state aid to religious schools. Three dozen other states have similar no-aid clauses for religious education. U.S. Senator Steve Daines and U.S. Representative Greg Gianforte have filed a brief arguing against the state of Montana in the case. The Montana Department of Commerce has awarded $700,000 in grants across eight tribal governments for tribal language revitalization efforts. Eric Young reports.
In Fort Belknap, there are two unique languages recognized with roughly five people able to speak each of them. Ray Seho is the Montana Language Preservation Program's project coordinator for the Assiniboine and Gros Ventre tribes. He says that the recently awarded funds come at a crucial time.
We need to do something now or it's going to be lost forever. And it's just our ancestors used it. They held on to it for us. It skipped a generation because of boarding schools and all, you know, everything that happened. But we have the chance and opportunity now to bring it back, revive it, and keep it alive.
Each tribe will receive $89,000 for individual initiatives. Plans and projects are already underway to expand current efforts such as classes, signage, DVDs, and online pronunciation guides. With the increased funding, preservation programs plan to expand on these resources along with new ones like phone applications, summer camps, and employing more instructors. Siho says that while there is overlap between languages and differences in dialect, the number of people who know them fluently has been decreasing. The biggest step towards preserving the languages, he says, is to reintroduce them into the people's everyday vocabulary.
We're fortunate to have a few elders still with us. Within the last 5 years when we started these programs, we have lost probably a good amount of elders that had the language, that knew it fluently.
The grant program was initially proposed in the Montana legislature 6 years ago. Lawmakers passed it last year as part of the state's main budget bill. With Yellowstone Public Radio, I'm Eric Young.
Law enforcement and family members are clashing over what they say killed a 16-year-old Crow girl who was found dead near an Interstate 90 rest stop earlier this week. Olivia Reingold reports.
Annie Leader is writing down questions she has about what happened to her niece, Selena Not Afraid.
And then the next one was what?
She's at the Old Crow Casino, taking notes on a massive piece of construction paper as relatives and friends shout out questions about Not Afraid's death and disappearance. Earlier this week, Not Afraid's body was found less than a mile from the Interstate 90 rest stop where she was last spotted New Year's Day. Law enforcement says there's no evidence of foul play, but some relatives say her body was dumped. There's a growing movement online that agrees. One online commenter using the hashtag JusticeForSal wrote, "If I hear the words hypothermia or no foul play suspected one more time, I'm starting a f***ing riot." For the past year, the community has watched as a handful of girls have gone missing or turned up dead in Bighorn County, where parts of the Crow and Northern Cheyenne reservations lie. Some of those cases have been ruled as deaths of exposure or have come back inconclusive. The Not Afraid family says they won't let that happen to Not Afraid, an enrolled Crow tribal member who was a junior at Hardin High School. Leader, Not Afraid's aunt.
We just have a lot of questions that need to be answered. And we just don't want this to be, swept under the rug anymore. There's just too many bodies found with no answers. And, this is enough. Enough is enough.
11 Native Americans are currently missing in Bighorn County, according to the Montana Department of Justice's Missing Persons Clearinghouse. The only other Montana county with that many missing Indigenous people is Yellowstone, but it has more than 12 times the population.
There's just too many, especially the young ones. Just the past few months, we've been just hearing almost every other day. We hear about someone missing, and we were hoping to get our Selena back, alive, but it didn't turn out that way. And it's got to stop. Sometimes it got to stop. We just want justice for our girls, our people.
To Leader, justice would mean having law enforcement investigate why no one found Not Afraid's body earlier. Leader says volunteers looked, unsuccessfully, in the exact place where Department of Interior searchers found her days later. Leader went to the site where Not Afraid's body was found, the day after it was discovered.
What I saw was there's no imprint of a body. If a body laid there for 19 plus days, there would have been imprint there.
She also says there were tire tracks near the site, which the Bighorn County Sheriff's Office denies. She wants to know why there were no body fluids at the scene. She also wants to know why early reports included that Not Afraid was possibly intoxicated. Francine Amiot, Not Afraid's grandmother, also went with Leader to the site to smudge and lay down flowers. Amiot.
When we went there, we weren't satisfied. We knew, for some reason, in all of us, we felt that... we had questions like, why wasn't there any evidence that she was been there from day one?
She thinks what happened is that her granddaughter was being held hostage during the near 3 weeks she was missing. Bighorn County Undersheriff Eric Winburn says he's found no evidence to support that throughout his investigation.
Well, you have to follow the evidence. And if they have evidence that there was foul play, then they need to bring it to the sheriff's office and we can investigate it. But we have no evidence that there's any foul play. Absolutely none.
What are the clues that tell you there's no foul play?
Well, they had to take her out in a vehicle, right? So if they did, there'd be tire tracks, right? There's no tire tracks. And if you're carrying her, there's going to be deep footprints, right? Because your weight and her weight, you're going to have deep footprints. There's no footprints out there.
And so what are I know the autopsy is yet to be performed, but what are the possible theories about what could have happened?
Well, we think she wandered out there and died of hypothermia is what we think. But the autopsy will show if, you know, there's any violence to the body.
And it was initially reported that she was possibly intoxicated. Is that relevant here?
She had been drinking. We don't know the extent she'd been drinking. And that might have been part of it too, yes. But we don't know the extent without the toxicology.
And what do you mean that might have been part of it?
Well, somebody that's been drinking may do something that somebody that's sober may not do something. So she may not have wandered out there. Who knows?
Investigators say the day before her disappearance, Not Afraid attended a New Year's Eve party in Billings. The next day, she was catching a ride back with five adults when the car stopped working.
The detectives interviewed everybody in the vehicle, and all of them were interviewed several times. So
he says when the car broke down, they pulled into an eastbound rest stop on I-90 between Hardin and Billings. He says a lot of the passengers got out.
They were told to get back in the van. They didn't get back in the van. Two of the girls didn't get back in the van. And then he told them, if I get the vehicle started and you're not in the van, you're going to be staying here. So he got the van started and he took off and two girls were left there.
Then he, who Winburn declined to identify, called his mother, who came and picked up the girls. When the car arrived, no one could find Not Afraid. The search for her started that night on New Year's Day. Eventually, a mix of federal, state, and local agencies got involved, including the Bureau of Indian Affairs and Department of Interior. She was found 19 days later during a systematic grid search of the rest area. Winburn says he's not sure how Not Afraid's death fits into the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Why it happens to this group of people, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
You mean you don't understand why this is happening to Native American women?
Yes, I don't know. I can honestly tell you I don't know.
Anita Lucchesi, a premier researcher on missing and murdered Indigenous women, says the Bighorn County Sheriff's Office is part of the problem.
In Bighorn County, Native women and girls go missing and are killed because law enforcement let it happen.
Her point is that when no one is charged in an instance like Not Afraid's, perpetrators think they can get away with their crimes. She says that applies even if no one touched Not Afraid.
In Montana, with the winter weather as bad as it is, if they knew that she was drunk and they left her alone in a field in a blizzard, that's manslaughter. That's intentional negligence that leads to someone's death.
She says since the 1990s, violence against women in Bighorn County has been increasing. That's according to a database she made of missing and murdered Indigenous women, which logs 28 cases in Bighorn County.
In the last year, we've seen quite a few cases now. Selena, Kay Sarah, Henny Scott, and I think people have finally had enough.
On Tuesday night, about 100 people gathered atop the rims in Billings.
We forgive those who trespass against us.
Girls holding pictures of Not Afraid arranged candles in a heart.
What are they making?
A pretty heart, baby.
People with red handprints over their faces, a symbol for missing and murdered Indigenous women, hung their heads as they prayed. Kim Kelch, who's dating a member of the Not Afraid family, arranged the event.
I feel like that us Native people don't think anybody cares. They don't think anybody will notice. They don't think anybody will come looking. They don't think anybody will do anything about it. But you know what? We're going to fight. We're going to go to war. We ain't going to give up until we are noticed.
Kelch says this is a fight for equality that could take generations. In the meantime, she says she's keeping her household under lock and key to protect her kids from Not Afraid's killers, who she says are out there. Not Afraid's aunt, Cheryl Horn, said on Facebook that Not Afraid's funeral will take place Sunday at 11 a.m. at Hardin High School. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Rheingold.
Olivia Rheingold is Yellowstone Public Radio's Report for America Corps member. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.